Hello, I'm Hannah Wilkinson. This is number 0349, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0349. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Alan Whitman and Andrew Masters. They are the creative minds behind Liquid Ass. How does one come up with a stinky product like this?
Well, actually, it was invented by accident back when I was in high school, and this is Alan Whitman. You know, one thing led to another. I went to college, went and got an engineering job, and we were having some issues with the managers and some things that were going on. We were about to be laid off. I decided to bring some in to work, and I guess the rest is history after that. That's when Liquid Ass was formally named and created.
Henderson Cooper is a security specialist. Is it possible to win the war against terrorism?
When you're talking about the world of terrorism, you're talking about an ongoing and evolutionary process. And so calling it a win situation is a difficult matter. Now, we can get the upper hand. If there's a single bad guy, we can stop the single bad guy. But if it's an evolving situation where people are born into it, people are learned into it, people are coaxed into it, then you're always going to be fighting at some level. So in terms of a yes or no answer, I would say no, we're not winning, but we are defeating the battle as we go along.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. What was it like when the political primary circus rolled into New York last week?
It was a very normal, average day in New York. A lot of people were involved. A lot of people went to vote. A lot of people have a lot of passion, more than they would have had on any other ordinary Tuesday. But the fact of the matter is, it was just hyped too much. And that's been the case since the beginning.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0349 was Hannah Wilkinson, a marketing student from McGill University. She's one of a group of hotshot marketing students that are helping the Stuff File program find its financial footing in the online world. Thank you very much, Hannah, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A male stripper sparked panic in Frankfurt's red light district after being spotted with what appeared to be an assault rifle and bulletproof vest emblazoned with FBI. A significant number of police officers were deployed to the area after Saturday night's sighting. The 30-year-old Hungarian man was later found in a table dance bar where he revealed the suspicious items were part of a costume for his act. The weapon turned out to be a plastic replica, according to a police statement. After a delay, the stripper was permitted to perform, but according to a police spokesperson, whether his act was a success is not known. Gee, I guess the next step would be a stripper in the guise of a suicide bomber. I'm sure someone in the audience would love to light that wick. Meanwhile, police in Texas said a man accused of stealing steaks from Walmart led officers on a high-speed chase and struck a police car with meat tossed from his window. Authorities said the suspect stole an undisclosed number of steaks from the Walmart neighborhood market in Longview. The ensuing police chase reached speeds exceeding 100 miles per hour and crossed two counties before the man was apprehended in Upshur County, according to sheriff's deputies and also the East Mountain Police. Now, East Mountain Police Sergeant Mark Nichols said the suspect attempted to get rid of some of the pilfered meats while fleeing police. He went on to say, "It appears that there's steaks and meats of some sort flying out the windows, and one of them bounced off my patrol car. That's not something you think of people stealing, especially running from the police in the process. Today was a new one." Nichols said the suspect surrendered after eventually stopping. Investigators said the suspect, whose name was not released, is believed to be a heroin user. Well, that brings new meaning to the question, where's the beef? It also brings new meaning to the term stakeout. Yeah. A hero of Greek mythology, known for his virility and thirst for women, has been stripped of his manhood one too many times, according to a seaside town in France. A 3-meter statue of Hercules, Greek mythology's divine hero, has stood in a park in Arkansas since 1948, and the town has been powerless to stop vandals from constantly snapping off the beloved sculpture's genitalia. Until now, that is. To avoid any further pain or embarrassment to the statue, the townspeople have created a removable penis for the Greek god for use only on special occasions which warrant ceremonies in the park. Okay, I want to know what kind of ceremonies in the park they're having that would require a penis in the first place. Anyway, Deputy Mayor Martine Philippeau said it was the best solution, otherwise you just end up constantly chasing after the anatomy of Hercules. Yeah, and nobody wants that. Unless, of course, it's some sort of special ceremony. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it's not very often that I quote a nun on this show, but here goes. At first, I thought it was a dream, because I had handcuffs on. I was in my habit. I'm a nun. But it was no dream. Sister Kimberly Miller, who teaches theology at Little Flower Catholic High School in Philadelphia, was under arrest. She doesn't know how she ended up in Washington Township, New Jersey, and says she took a sleeping pill with a glass of wine and went to bed at St. Veronica's Convent. She says she remembers nothing until she woke up in handcuffs at least 20 miles away from the convent. Police were called at 3 a.m. after Sister Kimberly allegedly crashed into a building and drove away. Her blood alcohol content was measured at 0.16%. That's double the level considered to be drunk driving. Clearly, Jesus was not her co-pilot. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania State Police troopers have arrested 78-year-old Agnes Panino, a nun from the Saints Cyril and Methodius Convent in Danville, after she allegedly shoplifted $23 worth of snacks, coffee, soap, and shampoo from a store. The crime was caught on security camera and appeared to be premeditated. The sister brought shopping bags in her purse and then left through a door that's not normally used as an exit. "I was shocked," the store manager said. "I couldn't believe that it was a nun that would actually do something like this." Well, yes, we all hate to see nuns developing such, you know, bad habits. Yeah, I said it. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, or guests, I should say. You know, last week on the show, we shared a story about a drunk guy in a bar who used a fart spray. At the time, I wasn't even aware that such a product existed. But in doing a little research, I found the interesting story of a company called Liquid Ass and the two guys who came up with the novelty product that now has a very legitimate use. On the line with us via Skype from North Carolina are Alan Whitman and Andrew Masters, the creators of Liquid Ass. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. I got to ask right off the bat, how does this idea even come up? Were you guys, like, you know, drinking at a bar one night and said, you know, we've got to invent this?
Well, actually, it was invented by accident back when I was in high school, and this is Alan Whitman. You know, one thing led to another. I went to college, went and got an engineering job, and we were having some issues with the managers and some things that were going on. We were about to be laid off. I decided to bring some in to work, and I guess the rest is history after that. That's when Liquid Ass was formally named and created.
Okay, so you say you invented this by accident in high school. A lot of things have been invented by accident. What were you trying to make when you came up with Liquid Ass?
Well, I can't really get into that, but I can tell you that it smells nasty and it's actually safe, which is the unique thing about Liquid Ass.
Okay, so you come up with this idea. You and Andrew go out and start this company. At what point did you say, you know, this is a product that we can sell? There's a need for this out there somewhere. What kind of R&D did you do to or marketing to find out that there was a market for your product?
Well, the first market was us, because, you know, I ran into our paths crossed working for an engineering department and in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we didn't like our managers, and Alan kept talking about the stuff he had in high school, and he still had a little bit left, and he kept talking about how he's going to bring it in one day, and one day he did, and we used it, and we pretty much had a 9,000 square foot area smelling like ass for about 4 hours. And, you know, that started the product testing and market testing, I guess you might say, where we were just having a blast for 3 months. And one day I said to the Whitman here, I said, hey, I said, this is the best stuff I've ever used. I said, we should sell this.
Yeah, I looked at him. I said, well, maybe we should. And and then one thing led to another. We decided to go in a partnership and just sort of head down that road and see where it went. And we didn't really know how to make it in mass quantities. We didn't know anything about creating a website. We didn't know anything about you know, starting a business. So we pulled an LLC and we started down that path. And here we are today talking to you.
Well, I think the quote of the day is, it's the best stuff I've ever used. And my first question to that is, compared to what?
Well, you know, I like doing pranks in college, and you know, I had my fair share of them. And one of them that I tried was the original fart spray that you get at Spencer's or used to. And, you know, that just didn't do anything. You know, I used it. Yeah, it smelled. But I had hit a guy's room, went in there a half hour later, and it didn't smell. And, you know, so I ended up spending $5 for a prank that didn't do anything. You know, but as far as just not, when I say the best thing I've ever used, as far as any prank involved, you know, you just have, as far as pulling pranks, you can do it anonymously. It's effective. It gets everybody's attention, and you're laughing, and no one knows about it, so you can do just like the shampoo instructions and repeat.
Okay, so you mentioned that the initial stuff that you had purchased in the past didn't have a long-lasting effect. So when using liquid ass, how much does one use, and how long does that last?
Well, if you're using the Mister, which is the form most people buy it in, we have a streaming tip, which is like a squirt gun, which you end up using about a third of a bottle for that. But with a Mister, I mean, a couple of pumps will take a room out. I mean, absolutely annihilate a room for a good half an hour. And there's at least 120 pumps in a bottle, probably more than that. That's probably conservative. So you get a lot of use. It doesn't take much. It's very concentrated. And that's the beauty of it. You don't have to walk around with a gallon of it to get the job done. It doesn't take much at all.
I'd hate to be a new car dealer that got you upset.
Well, we've had people that said they got a deal on their cars and houses and everything else. We don't recommend that, but you know, there's crazy things, just like this guy that used it in the bar, supposedly sprayed some girl with it. And I don't know if that was probably the best idea, but you know, it's just like weapons. You can't stop somebody using it incorrectly.
Now, I said in the introduction that you came up with this novelty product, but it now has, after checking your website, a very legitimate use. You were contacted by people involved with the military, were you not?
Yes, Stu Segal from Strategic Ops, he contacted us, and apparently they have a triage operation where it's a simulation where they train Navy SEALs and military personnel. And I guess it works really well when they're doing, like, I don't know, bowel injuries and things like that, where they got to simulate people going and picking them up and working on these mannequins. So they want the smell to make it ultra realistic. And he's got like a studio set that's, I don't know, it's sort of like Hollywood in a way, I guess. They've got the buildings, they got the little tower, they've got the call to prayer and all this stuff going on, because they were doing some type of Iraqi type stuff when they were doing it. And it just it really makes it real. And we also have companies that buy it for, I guess, college training kits, you know, for bowel surgery and whatnot.
And I should mention that you have the website, liquidass.com. People should check out the website and check out that video. It really is very, very interesting. Now, I'm wondering, do you guys have families? And the reason why I bring that up is, I mean, you're engineers, and you say, you know what, we're leaving all that behind us, and we're going to start a company that's called Liquid Ass that sells a fart spray. I mean, what did family and friends say when you said what you were embarking on?
Well, I think it's pretty reasonable that somebody would go out and sell ass for a living. I mean, but no, you know, my parents were skeptical if it was a good idea or not. Now my dad uses it at the horse track when he goes in Florida and just has an absolute blast with it. So he's definitely on board. My wife was, you know, she was less than happy about it at the time. And I told her that if we made money with it, then I'd take her back to Jamaica where we had gotten married at Sandals and the Grill. And 2 years later, we made our first dime, and I did make good on that promise. And, you know, she's definitely on board with it now, and it's now how I make a living. So it's sort of living the dream.
On the other hand, my wife thought it was a great idea, and now I'm divorced.
You know, when I first saw the video of you guys explaining what the product was and how it got started, all I kept thinking was, I love watching Shark Tank, and this would never fly.
Well, I have a feeling the sharks would get, I guess they get asked, as they say. If they didn't accept it, we'd have to just go ahead and take care of business.
Yeah. The studio wouldn't smell very good after we left.
Explain where the how you came up with the name, by the way.
It's kind of off the cuff thing that Whitman did. We had we were started working on this while we were still had our day jobs, and we went and we had decided to go on this path. So obviously you have to have a name. So we went and grabbed a conference room, and so we walking in there, and Whitman started to sit down, and he's like, "So what are we going to call it?" All right, no, I said that. I said, "So what are we going to call it?" And Whitman sits down. And he goes, "I don't know, liquid ass." I'm like, "Oh, that's it."
Yeah, he was just like, "That's it." I said, "Let me sleep on that for a little bit. I'm not sure if we can go there or not." But the more I thought about it, that if you smell the product, and I don't know if you have any there with you, but if you smell the product, I think that you could probably come up with that possibility. I mean, we've had people call it by name walking down the hall, so I think we nailed it.
Now, I mentioned the website, liquidass.com. Is that the best way to buy the product? And how do you sell it? You mentioned various forms that it comes in. What are the various forms, and what does it sell for?
Sure. Well, it depends on how many bottles that you buy. We have package deals. The package deals are way better than buying the single bottles. And as far as variation, we have Barfume, which is a puke smell. We have Texas that's really designed for the streaming tip version of the bottle or the cap, and it's sort of a two-part smell. You lay it down and it smells good for a while, like a nice rack of ribs cooking, a nice barbecue smell, and then that flashes off first, and then it goes back to the ass smell that we all know and love. And as far as other variations, that would be the streaming tip versus the mister. Streaming tip is like it's a rubberized bottle. It shoots out sort of like a squirt gun. You can sort of hold that in the palm of your hand. And I always say, if you're getting your enemy, you want to use that one.
I always use a streaming tip.
Yeah, well, he's always got enemies. But but if you want to get your friend's house, you want to use the mister, so it sort of hits hard and goes away quicker. It doesn't stick on anything. It's sort of in the air, you know, and you mist it into the air, then it can just sort of go away with the air. But if you put it on something, it's going to hang around. And that could be a problem depending on where you're at.
You guys aren't going to either one of the political conventions coming up in the summer in the United States, are you?
We probably should. But the other thing that we sell on the website is we have a fake human turd, and we have ultra realistic dog turds, and you definitely want to take a look at those on the website as well. I mean, they've got corn and hair in them. You're not going to find that in any other dog turd or human turd.
You know, perfection is very important in authenticity in anything you do. So kudos to you guys for going the extra mile. The website, again, is liquidass.com. Alan Whitman and Andrew Masters, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Well, thanks for having us on. We had a great time, and make sure that we get with you. We want to make sure you get a bottle later, because I think you'll have some use for it.
I look forward to that. Thanks, guys. Alan Whitman and Andrew Masters, the creators of Liquid Ass. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0349, and you'll find the links to their website.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment.
Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come in the program, we will talk about terrorism and how the fight can be won, if at all. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, in March, one District of Columbia government administrative law judge was charged with misdemeanor assault on another. Judge Sharon Goody said she wanted to give Judge Joan Davenport some files, but Davenport, who was in her office, would not answer the door. Goody said once the door finally opened, an enraged Davenport allegedly lunged at her, aiming her thrust at Goody's neck. Wow. Good thing she didn't bring her gavel with her. This is what happens when judges go bad. And we have a couple of items here that come under the heading of undignified deaths. Number one, a 69-year-old man was killed on March 17th while awaiting emergency care at Vidant Medical Center in Greenville, North Carolina. He had been seriously injured in an earlier accident and was in the waiting room when a 59-year-old driver's car crashed through the hospital's doors and fatally struck him. And number two, a 55-year-old man was killed in Memphis, Tennessee on March 23rd when a 15-foot trailer came loose and crashed into him on a sidewalk. The deceased, who had a lengthy criminal record for sexual assault, might have avoided the trailer if he had not been so distracted by watching pornography on his phone as he walked. Okay, the first item is just a sad classic case of when it's your time to go, it's just your time to go. The second item, well, that's just karma. Yeah. Britain's annual boring conference this year, held on July 5th at Cornwall Hall in London. Look forward to it. Add it to your calendar if you can. Brings together those who celebrate the mundane. Previous topics include sneezing, toast, vending machine sounds, yellow lines, and barcodes. And in anticipation, a BBC News commentator interviewed Peter Willis of the Letterbox Study Group. Willis, who is 68 and clearly has lots of time on his hands, was excited at having recently acquired access to a database of all 115,000 mailboxes served by UK's Royal Mail and hopes, with the help of splendid mapping software, to visit and photograph each one to examine the different styles. No doubt, speaking for all members, Willis said, "The lay version of boring implies inactivity, but the obsessives in his study group, and in attendance at the boring conference, lead active lives with a wide range of interests." The conference, by the way, is sold out. Sorry for you folks who were looking to add to your already thrilling lives. And police finally armed with a warrant after months of neighbors' complaints about loud music raided Michael Baker's small one-room apartment in Croydon, England in March and confiscated 34 loudspeakers that allegedly Baker had been using at high volumes at all hours. After entering the home with the aid of a locksmith, police left Baker with only a CD player and a pair of earphones. Yes, oh, the punishment is sweet music. Lower volume music, but sweet nonetheless. And Bill Bailey, a former 9-year employee of the Water Irrigation Network near Grand Junction, Colorado, was awarded unemployment benefits in December after being wrongfully fired. The company claimed Bailey was insubordinate and that any complaints he had were merely because he was too sensitive to workplace fun and unable to forgive and forget his supervisor's team-building spirit. According to an administrative law judge, the fun included, among other things, detonating unannounced ear-splitting PVC potato guns, using golf balls and other items on the job, and Bailey's boss placing his own feces in a bag inside Bailey's lunch pail. Ha, 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 ha. Yikes. At one point in the hearing, during the boss's mirthful, carefree descriptions of the fun, the judge felt the need to advise him of his Fifth Amendment right. Following the judge's decision, Bailey's two supervisors resigned. You know, under American jurisprudence, you do have the right to remain silent. However, some people are just incapable of using it. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the giant HSBC Bank, which was let off the hook back in 2012 for its money laundering by paying out a $1.9 billion settlement and promising to vigilantly guard against future money laundering, was revealed in March to be regressing. HSBC's monitor said that the bank somehow failed to stop transactions by a company whose professed business included exporting miniskirts to Iran, which would be against international sanctions, but also not exactly smart business. In another incident, a 19-year-old Mexican man in the drug cartel-intensive Sinaloa state was allowed to open a private wealth account with just a bag full of cash, claiming to be a shrimp farmer. Gee, you know, maybe Bernie Sanders is right about the big banks after all. What do you think? Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? The battle against terrorism is being waged on many fronts, but is it a battle we're winning? We put that question to Henderson Cooper, a retired detective supervisor for the LAPD and a former covert operations officer with the CIA. He is also currently a security specialist, and he joins us on the line from LA. Hi, Henderson.
Hi there. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for being on the program with us. I'll just put the question right, as I said in the introduction, is this a battle we're winning?
Well, winning is an interesting concept. You know, in sports, there's a time limit. You know, you get 60 minutes or whatever it might be from start to finish, and at the end, whoever has the most points wins. When you're talking about the world of terrorism, you're talking about an ongoing and evolutionary process. And so calling it a win situation is a difficult matter. Now, we can get the upper hand. We can stop. If there's a single bad guy, we can stop the single bad guy. But if it's an evolving situation where people are born into it, people are learned into it, people are coaxed into it, then you're always going to be fighting at some level. So in terms of a yes or no answer, I would say no, we're not winning, but we are defeating the battle as we go along.
I think back to the days of Prohibition when the feds went after criminals by using the RICO Act. If they couldn't get them on a criminal act, they got them on things like tax evasion. In other words, they followed the money. That's how they got Al Capone. What about the situation when it comes to terrorists? What about following the money? I know in some cases, groups like ISIS, what they're doing is they're getting money by selling oil on the black market. How do you choke that off?
Well, again, when you're dealing with terrorists, you may or may not be dealing with states. If you're dealing with states, then you have a solid infrastructure that you can identify and target. When you're dealing with terrorists, like in this case with ISIS, you may or may not have that option. So you've got to identify where they are and how they are. If you've got some brick and mortar, then you can go to that brick and mortar and attack it. In the case of this, what ISIS has in terms of oil resources are what they've stolen, what they've taken over. So they take over land, and they take over oil fields or oil facilities, and they possess that. Yes, you know, those things can be attacked. We can attack those things either financially or militarily or in some other kind of fashion. So we can do that, but in terms of easily identifying how and where their resources are, if they have a facility and the facility is run by ISIS and the facility is in and around civilian areas, you're not necessarily going to go blow that location up, because we're not in the business of blowing up innocent people. So you're going to have to find another way in which you're going to attack their ownership of or their possession of an oil field or an oil facility.
Yeah, but when I say follow the money, oil is of absolutely no use to anyone if you can't sell it. So why not follow the trail, or at least find out the trail of who it's being sold to on the black market? Could you not cut it off that way?
But that's the point about the black market. There is always someone willing to buy on the black market, and no one owns the black market. The black market is like the dark web. If you can access a buyer, you can access a seller. I mean, you know, because they aren't a place and they aren't a fixed thing, it's easy to get around. It's not like you have an oil company with an address on Park Avenue. You know, you're talking about some shady characters contacting by phone or by email, and negotiating a deal. And in some, maybe in a ship in the middle of the ocean, they negotiate, a trade deal and get engaged in the trade of oil.
Okay, now getting back to the idea of just terrorism as a growing concern, is it? I know it is a big deal. It is something to really be concerned about. But is it as big as everyone is making it out to be? And the reason why I say that, it's always in the media, the concerns about terrorism. Now there is a big political campaign and a push towards the White House, and all members of both parties are campaigning hard about keeping America safe. Isn't that to a certain degree a bit of, for lack of a better term, fear-mongering?
It's always possible. You know, when politics is involved, it's always possible that people are throwing in things or making issues about things that are topical and exciting and more interesting. But let me say this. Before you get blown up, before your place gets bombed, before you get attacked, it's not a big concern to you. It's only after you come under attack that it becomes a big concern. Right now, Belgium is reeling from being attacked several times. France is reeling from being attacked. Prior to this, it probably wasn't as big a concern to them. Here in America, in California, we had a city, San Bernardino, that got attacked by some rogue individual terrorists. That area was not concerned about terrorism in the way that people in the Middle East would have been concerned about it prior to that attack. Today, they're concerned about it.
Okay, you bring up San Bernardino, Belgium, and France, and there are distinct differences between two of those and the third, and that brings me to the next question. You, as someone who is an expert on terrorism, what are you concerned and worried about the most? Something that is planned and organized like France and Belgium, or the individual rogue sympathizer like what took place in San Bernardino?
Well, I don't want to make one more exciting or interesting than the other, but I will say this. If it's a nation state that's attacking you or threatening you, you can easily identify them. If it's an individual, they're hard to identify. Who knows what is in the hearts and minds of an individual that's living in your city in Canada or in my city in America? You simply don't know. And so identifying the unknowns is a difficulty for law enforcement, a difficulty for the intelligence community. It's a difficulty for society. And so those guys are the ones that I'm most concerned with. And I say guys euphemistically. those individuals, whether they may be male or female, are the ones that, that most concern me, because they can be standing right next to you in an elevator.
So what do you think the average everyday American or Canadian should do to remain vigilant? What should we be doing or not doing?
Well, that's what I'm composing in my book for you, Your Situational Awareness, because I want you to be aware of yourself first. I don't want you to rely on the police. I don't want you to rely on your government. I don't want you to rely on your military. I want you to be aware of yourself and your own vulnerabilities first. I want you to prepare yourself, educate yourself on what are your vulnerabilities, what are your options, and how you respond to a situation. So if you're a distracted driver, stop being a distracted driver. If you're a distracted walker, stop being a distracted walker. If you go out late at night and put yourself in situations that are higher risk, you need to be aware of that and maybe reconsider that kind of conduct. You know, when you go to a location, you know, there was a movie some years ago called Ronin, if you remember that, with I think it was Robert De Niro. And early in the movie, he makes a statement when a woman asks him why he came into the bar to begin the movie. And he says, "Lady, I don't go into a place I don't know how to get out of." And that is the way I conduct myself. I don't go into a place I don't know how to get out of. When I am around people, I'm paying attention to the people. When I'm in situations, I pay attention to the situation I'm in. How do I get in? How do I get out? You know, who's walking around me that's sweating profusely on a hot day because he's wearing a jacket and he looks nervous? You know, who is carrying a backpack and sits it down and walks away from it? I pay attention to those things, and that is what I encourage people to do, because you are your own first defense.
One of the things, I mean, we use the word terrorist and the terms terrorism, and one of the things the terrorists want to do, besides obviously kill us, is to keep us thinking about the idea that they're going to kill us. Is that part of the psychological battle, and how do we not succumb to it? You know, the whole idea of not changing our way of life to conform to somebody else's so-called plan for us.
Yeah, they definitely have us on our heels, because they know what they know, and we know nothing about what they know. They're always going to be ahead of us, and that's one of the problems why you need one of the reasons why you need your own situational awareness, because they know when they're going to do what they're going to do, and they know how they're going to do it. And we're never going to be there, so they keep us on our heels, because we simply can't know what they know or what they're planning. And the only way we do that is through ways that the public doesn't want, no one wants, and that is intrusive intelligence, intrusive surveillance. Those are the only ways that we're going to find out the unknown things.
You mentioned a book, Your Situational Awareness. What's the status of your book?
It's with my editor, and my editor is beating me up and wanting to make some changes, and so we're reviewing the changes right now.
When do you anticipate it'll be coming out?
In the next several months, I believe it should be coming out.
When it comes out, will you come back on the program and talk with us about the book?
Well, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Excellent. Henderson, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. It was a pleasure to have you on the show to talk about this very important issue of terrorism.
Thank you very much. Anytime.
Security Specialist Henderson Cooper, talking about terrorism. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. When you think of all the things you'll spend money on this month, where could you cut back if you wanted to save money? There's the home payment or rent, maybe a car payment, groceries, lawsuits. What? You don't have a line in your budget for lawsuits? Well, if you pay taxes, you're paying a lot for lawsuits, even if you've never been sued. I thought about this when reading an article about how much local governments pay when they're sued. Officials in New York City's law department just announced that the city will spend a record $746 million to settle lawsuits next year. Unfortunately, spending on lawsuits is rising in cities and counties throughout the country. But government officials don't pay the tab for these lawsuits. We all do, as taxpayers. Let's be fair. Eliminating lawsuit abuse will save money for important things like police and fire protection. But it also means we won't have to cut back on other things that we need each month, like groceries and transportation. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, from the city that never sleeps. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the city that never sleeps.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. What was it like last week? Give us the background as to what it was like for having the New York City host the primaries for their respective circuses, the Republicans and the Democrats coming to town. So did you enjoy the hype before, during, and after the big vote on Tuesday?
It was a lousy hockey game.
Excuse me?
It was a lousy hockey game. That's the best description I can give it. They go into a hockey game all excited about what's going to happen, and then it turns out to be very boring and dull. Most of the tension, excitement, comments were really created by the media. It was a very, and I mean this seriously, a very normal, average day in New York. A lot of people were involved. A lot of people went to vote. A lot of people have a lot of passion, more than they would have had on any other ordinary Tuesday. But the fact of the matter is, it was just hyped too much. And that's been the case since the beginning. I'll give you a very good example. When Trump started running, one of the first things he said was he was going to build a wall. He was going to build a wall to keep the people out from Mexico. Well, maybe it was to build a wall to keep the people out from Canada. I don't remember. Was it Canada or was it Mexico? I guess it was Mexico.
No.
And, of course, the press made a big deal about that, and they said he destroyed his votes among the Latinos, the Hispanics, the Spanish and all that, and he'd never recover from it. I said, nonsense. I said, if anything, the Hispanic, Latino people in the United States are going to be happy about that. Because if those people come over from Mexico, whose jobs do you think they're going to take? And sure enough, it turned out I was 100% right, because the demographics of New York is so unbelievably varied. Trump did resoundingly well in the Latino neighborhoods. He won in all the Latino neighborhoods of New York City, and it was as I predicted. They didn't want those foreigners coming here to take away their jobs. So that was one example that we've been living with. This other thing about, we've been living with this thing about the fact that he hates women, and that goes on and on and on and on and on. The guy's always had a very good reputation in New York City as a family man. You know, you take a look at his family, of course it's a family of a bunch of fat cat kids. But on the other hand, he's done a pretty good job. They've never gotten into trouble. They've never been arrested. There's no problems. He has a daughter who's married to an Orthodox Jew. So much for that anti-Semitism. His grandchildren are Jewish. So much for that anti-Semitism. So I could go on and on and on and hopefully not bore you. But so much nonsense has been going on. It's like Cruz. Yeah, Cruz the liar. Cruz the liar. Bernie Sanders. He's not even a real New Yorker. He's not a real New Yorker. So if anything, I think the number one emotion you'd find among most people at this point is, whew, thank God the New York primary is over, and now the other primaries are other states' problems, not ours. It's been very, very, very discouraging and very weary.
In the week leading up to the primary, was it impossible for you to turn your television on without seeing commercial after commercial for one candidate or another, or one super PAC or another?
No, I mean, the money that was spent, you know, you're talking about a job that's worth, I don't know, $200,000 a year, $300,000 a year. There are some talk show hosts who make more money than that. So who goes out and spends $1 billion to get that job? And then why do you give money to people who are running for that job? You're expecting to get something back. I mean, I think one of the things that rang the best with Trump anyway is that he kept saying over and over again, ad nauseum, I'm self-funded. But in a way, there was something nice about that, because how are you going to buy a favor out of this guy? So it really was almost as if every year or every 4 years, the media gets together with the politicians and they say, come on, let's really dream up a sitcom. And that's what they did, and that's what they're doing once again.
Now, let's look on the other side of the ledger when it comes to the parties. Bernie Sanders had that big gathering, a big rally at Coney Island on the boardwalk. Were you there?
No, I wasn't. As a matter of fact, I went to the debate that he had with Hillary at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And that's an interesting place because that's where most of the ships were built, or a lot of the ships were built during World War II. That's where a lot of ships left to go overseas to Europe. The Nazi U-boats used to hang outside and sink them as they were coming out. The first stop usually was Nova Scotia, and then they'd have to kind of work their way. I'm talking about the American, British, and Canadian ships and have to work their way. So it was a very historic spot. It's not like an industrial park. And we went there, and again, it was my theory of, oh, boy, this is going to be a great hockey game. It was just the most boring debate in the world. I mean, neither one of them really went after somebody. You know, it would have been very nice for Bernie to have said, Mrs. Clinton, why did you enable your husband? I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable statement you could have made.
I tend to disagree with that, but anyway, go ahead.
That he enabled her, or that she should have said it?
No, that's a legitimate question in asking in her race to be president of the United States.
I said we were going to have a fight. No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That I would have liked to have her ask that question. And then I would have liked somebody to ask Bernie Sanders, when did you become Jewish? Well, I'm not saying he's not Jewish. I mean, if his mother was Jewish, he's Jewish. But he's what we call in New York City a closet Jew, just like the owner of the New York Times, just like Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of the city of New York, former mayor. He kept that very well hidden. You've never seen any pictures or known anything about it. And a lot of people were surprised. Remember, there was a big deal made about the fact she may become the first woman president. How about he may become the first Jewish president?
Well, I think all those bets are off after you've had your first black president. You know, that's...
Yeah, but I mean, this expression, and I think maybe I coined it, and please don't everybody start accusing me of being anti-Semitic, but, you know, I freely admit to everybody that I'm a black Jamaican. But in any event, the big thing is it's the relief of it over, because the commercials, the ads, and on and on and on. And the other thing that a lot of people were annoyed about, and I mean, look, you're a broadcaster, you're internationally known, fine, but you're not the news. And what these clowns did is that every time they interviewed one of the candidates, all of a sudden the presenter was more important than the person. I mean, take a look at Megyn Kelly incident. All of a sudden, she became the most important famous person in the United States, maybe even worldwide. Hmm.
Okay, you mentioned talk show hosts, and I want to bring that up. I know it's not something that you were planning to discuss, but I figured you must be in the running to replace Michael Strahan on Live with Kelly and Michael, are you?
No, I'm not. And I don't mind those guys being celebrities. I mind broadcasters being celebrities, except for you. You can be a celebrity. But your job is to report the news and comment on it, not be bigger. No, that's a big story. And also, when the thing about Prince came out, was also a big story. So that kind of knocked the presidential thing off the front pages a little bit, thank goodness.
So you don't want to replace Michael Strahan? I thought you'd be perfect for that job. Couldn't you see yourself sitting next to Kelly?
No, I'm very, very happy with what I do. I come and I go. It's a Peter Pan existence. I get to speak to nice people like you and your audience, and you let me rant and rage. And it's a lot of fun. I'm happy to stay the way I am.
I got one more item to ask you about, and that is one that is a Canadian. What is it that your mayor has against Canadians, Mayor de Blasio? He's got this battle going on with Mark Messier?
Yeah, and he's a, and de Blasio's a phony liberal. I guess I just don't like phonies. You know, walks around and then we're going to do this for everybody and we're going to do that for everybody and we're going to have equal this, we're going to have equal that. So Mark Baby, you know, all the Canadian hockey players end up in New York City eventually, at least business-wise, comes up with a great idea because of his stature and everything. I don't mean he's a little guy. That he's going to build a hockey center up in the Bronx, which, by the way, is a predominantly black area. And historically, although some may disagree, black kids play basketball, white kids play hockey. Okay? I mean, it's a generality, but it's kind of true to some extent. So Mark comes up with this wonderful idea that he's going to build this great hockey center, which is going to be good for the economy of the Bronx. And it's also going to get a lot of black kids interested in playing hockey who don't play hockey. So, and the one person that's fighting against him is Mayor de Blasio. And Mark Messier is now going to take him to court because, after all, look, there is another agenda of Mark making money on it. It's a business proposition. I'm sure he's going to do quite well with it and all of that. But he's all but saying, he hasn't come out with the words, but I'm saying that de Blasio, who's the big deal liberal, who has a black wife, I can't think of any reason he's against the hockey thing. Then he just doesn't want, I know this sounds silly, black kids play hockey.
Well, maybe we should get P.K. Subban in there to work as an ambassador and bring these two groups together.
Well, it's not so much. It's just if you got a guy with the stature of a Mark Messier or Gretzky or I know there's been famous people who've played for the Rangers, but nobody remembers their names. You know, you let them do it. It's what a wonderful project. Be really very great to have another demographics interested in a sport.
And on that note, sir, I got to let you go. Again, people can find out more information by going to your website at www.gabby.com, and also they can send you an email to peter@gabby.com, and maybe they should also write your name in and suggest that you get to replace Michael Strahan, because I still think that's the best bet. You should be sitting there every morning at 9 with Michael with Kelly Ripa, and then you can, you know, drive your taxi after the show is over at 10.
But, no, if they offer me that job, I'm going to suggest you.
No, I can't move to the States. It's no. There's going to be a wall, remember? Yes. Thank you, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you for letting me rant and rage.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about into the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way just in a matter of moments. But I want to mention very quickly that we'd love to hear from you here at the Stuff File program. Just send me an email with your thoughts or questions about the show and we'll respond. You can email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and some of the questions might even make it onto the air in our mailbag section, okay? Also, Facebook users, we urge you to join the Stuff File fan page. It's easy to find. It's at facebook.com/thestufffileprogram. We'd love to have you as part of the fun. The more, the merrier. And as we always keep telling you, remember, this show is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, it's time now for, boys and girls, yes, the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
27-year-old Sean Archbold was arrested after allegedly negotiating to pay a prostitute in Melbourne, Florida, $40 for, well, you know, certain acts. According to police reports, Archbold went to an ATM to withdraw the cash, but was called back to work before he could make the payment and was taken into custody when he arrived there. He was charged with engaging or committing prostitution and posted $500 bond. The prostitute in question was an undercover police officer, and Archbold had been under investigation for similar actions for about 4 months. Archbold was also a member of the police department in Melbourne, and he was on duty and in uniform at the time of the incident and arrest. Kind of makes you wonder, if he had gone through with the deal, would he have put in for overtime? Because why? Oh, why? When you're a police officer on the job, would you solicit a prostitute to have your gun polished while on duty? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0349. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0349. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air online as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.